The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham begot Isaac, Isaac begot Jacob, and Jacob begot Judah and his brothers. Judah begot Perez and Zerah by Tamar. Perez begot Hezron, and Hezron begot Ram. Ram begot Amminadab, Amminadab begot Nahshon, and Nahshon begot Salmon. Salmon begot Boaz by Rahab. Boaz begot Obed by Ruth. Obed begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David the king. David the king begot Solomon by her who had been the wife of Uriah. Solomon begot Rehoboam. Rehoboam begot Abijah, and Abijah begot Asa. Asa begot Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat begot Joram, and Joram begot Uzziah. Uzziah begot Jotham. Jotham begot Ahaz, and Ahaz begot Hezekiah. Hezekiah begot Manasseh. Manasseh begot Amon, and Amon begot Josiah. Josiah begot Jeconiah and his brothers about the same time they were carried away to Babylon. And after they were brought to Babylon, Zechariah begot Shealtiel, and Shealtiel begot Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel begot Abiud, Abiud begot Eliakim, and Eliakim begot Azor. Azor begot Zodak. Zodak begot Achim, and Achim begot Eliud. Eliud begot Eleazar. Eleazar begot Matham, and Matham begot Jacob. And Jacob begot Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who is called Christ. So all the generations from Abraham to David are 14 generations. From David until the captivity of Babylon are 14 generations. And from the captivity in Babylon until the Christ are 14 generations. Verse 18. Now the birth of Jesus Christ was as follows. After his mother Mary was betrothed to Joseph, before they came together, she was found with child of the Holy Spirit. Then Joseph, her husband, being a just man, and not wanting to make her a public example, was minded to put her away secretly. But while he thought about these things, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, saying, Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take to you Mary, your wife, for that which is conceived in her is of the Holy Spirit. And she will bring forth a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. Now all this was done that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the Lord through the prophet, saying, Behold, a virgin shall be with child and bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which is translated God with us. Then Joseph, being aroused from sleep, did as the angel of the Lord commanded him, and took to him his wife, and did not know her till she had brought forth her firstborn son, and he called his name Jesus.
Of course, we all know what this chapter has to say, right? So we just kind of go on to something else.
You know, something interesting I was just looking at here. For some reason, I never noticed this before, but it said that Joseph didn't want to expose Mary to public disgrace. I know that it doesn't say stoning.
Right.
Or execution, which...
Which would be a custom of that.
So, makes me wonder if it was just because under Roman
Roman law that they couldn't do that kind of thing, or if it was just that the proof of such would have been very tenuous. Just, it was an interesting observation in that scene.
Anybody has any comment about that? Ellie?
Didn't just the daughters of Levites were required to be stoned?
Burned, I think.
Burned.
That's, right. That's different. Of a priest, not just leave, a priest. Any more comments?
Yeah, the Jews said that never was enforced anyway.
And why is that genealogy traced through the father, even though he is not the father?
Guess two questions so far. One is, why is it traced through Joseph? And the other one was, why didn't he just have her killed? Any other questions? This is getting interesting now, isn't it?
Oh,
yes. You have another question?
Yeah. Well, no, it's just funny to me that you've got here, especially in the Christian, traditional Christian approach to it, you've got the conception and the birth, which takes 9 months, all celebrated at the same, in the same time frame.
Well, talk about chapter 1 here for right now. Okay.
Wasn't there something in the Old Testament that said that's the way he would be born, and it's for the Jewish nation? Only they didn't accept him. Only part of them accepted him. The rest of them didn't because of his birth.
That's very true. Let's see. Technically speaking, yes, and it has to be association with him being called Emmanuel. And that is a prophecy that was given to a Pacific king, and it's in the book of Isaiah. We probably will turn there today to be very careful of what the words are saying. And it's against the house of David. When that statement was made, that he will be known as Emmanuel. And it was a statement by God saying, you don't believe me, it's going to happen. And against the house of David, not against the Jewish people or anybody else, it was aimed at the throne, if I could use that point, of David. We'll go back there today. That's another interesting approach. I'm glad you brought that up. Yes.
Where were the Hasmoneans descended from? Were they Judah?
Whom?
Hasmoneans.
Yeah, the Herod and all those.
No, Herod was not. That's another subject matter altogether. Herod was not.
The reason that the question comes up is that the prophecy was against the house of David.
Correct.
Thus, you know, when you have these witnesses coming to the kings in power saying that, look, the Messiah is here, and they reject it, that the prophecy is coming true, thus right. The judgment is coming against the house of David.
Herod's family, the line of Herod, as we know in the New Testament here, they were not Jewish. They were not Christian. They were not Israelites. They were... Yes?
But Herod did marry into the Hasmonean.
He married, but he himself was. Now, what took place was Herod the Great, which is before him. This is the third generation of the Herods. What took place in Herod the Great was when the the Jewish religion at that point in time were about as aggressive a religious organization as you could be. And they forced the family of Herod to be proselytes or they would be killed. It's the only time in history that they ever did that.
Well, only recorded time.
Yeah, right. And it's very fascinating to know that now the third generation comes along and lo and behold, of that line, of the Herod line, wants to eliminate the king of Israel. Because he really was not king of Israel. Herod the Great was appointed king of Israel, but not by any line of anything with the line of David. No association whatsoever.
The Hasmoneans Levites?
I'm sorry, what?
The Hasmoneans were Levites, right?
Not Herod, and the family of Herod itself was not Levite.
No, I'm talking about the Hasmoneans.
Oh, yeah. I don't know that much about that history. You may know more than I do. I'll accept that as...
They were Levites, and so Herod married one of the Hasmoneans.
Right, but the line does not go through the women. It's only modern history do it has to go through women. Daniel.
Actually, for Paul correctly, explained to me many years ago that the female dictates whether or not the person is descended of Abraham. The male dictates what tribe they're from.
That's how it was
supposed to be traced.
But descendant of Abraham is a little bit different than saying you're Jewish.
Exactly. No, I agree. No.
Right.
The female dictates whether or not you're descendant of Abraham. The male dictates what tribe you are from. Ridiculous.
Okay.
So now,
that was what I was told many years ago.
And it could be very true. It's very close. To, I mean, I understand that point too. But
hold on, so women would once got to name the males or name the children. So all of the tribes of Jacob's tribes were all named by their moms, not by Jacob himself. And that's one of the reasons why they traced it from a descendant of Abraham through mother, not from the tribe.
So
we have
if a person from the tribe of Issachar marries a non-Israelite woman, are his children no longer, since they're not of Abraham, does his tribal inheritance disappear?
Yes. The children do not have tribal inheritance.
I mean, the only thing I throw in there is, wait a minute, we have to go back
to...
No,
that's tradition.
That's tradition. He's talking tradition, not biblical information.
Thou shalt.
Yeah.
Because God says what he wants.
Right.
But right. You're dealing with tradition here and not with what's written. What was the other question?
It has some basis with the family of Abraham.
But what I find fascinating...
This has the basis with the house of David. We're talking about the house of David here. This is aimed to Abraham leading up to, 14 generations from there to there. 14 generations from there to there. 14 generations from there to there. What's it aiming at? Yes.
There are women named in here. There's five of them.
Yeah, there are five.
Well, we know that there are obviously other women who are not named, but the five that are named...
Ruth, Rahab,
Tamar. Tamar is the first one.
Hey, listen to the wording, though. I understand what you're saying, but listen to the wording. Because it's saying here that Boaz begot Oab by Ruth. I understand that. We're talking about a specific line here, and this is what Matthew, being who he was, he was a what? What do you do for a living?
Tax collector.
The only way he could tax, that is put poll tax on, he had the name of all the generations going down, and that's why when we were at Capernaum, here he was a tax collector, and what did he do? He charged tax on the family line. And so he had all that recorded history in his books. And God didn't make a mistake. He used Matthew because Matthew is the one man that can actually record the line better than anybody else in this scenario.
But there's women he mentioned.
I don't have any disagreement with what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the women are not the ones that rule. I'm sorry, back to Abraham. Ruth was not part of Abraham. Ruth was part of Lot.
Well, besides, it tells who he had the next son by. But it doesn't negate that. It doesn't make another generation. It just delineates who the woman was, where it still just counts as one.
It's the same generation.
It's not an extra one, right? Yeah, it's not an extra one, right. Okay.
I think you understand the point I'm making. Okay. You're making a point that I'm not trying to make.
Okay, what are you trying to make? Maybe I misunderstand.
You're going off on a tangent. I don't know what you're going.
Well, just explain what you're...
What I find fascinating about this, that these five women are named, is that he doesn't name every single woman,
right,
whether they're Israelite or not.
Right,
he names only specific women.
Right.
And these women that he does go through the trouble to name for us are Tamar, Rahab, Bathsheba, Ruth, and then Mary. And most of them are not Israelite. Tamar was Canaanite. Rahab was Canaanite. Ruth was Moabite, who you mentioned earlier, the Lot and
okay.
that. Bathsheba, we don't know for sure if she was Israelite or not, but she might not have been because she was married to Uriah the Hittite. Daughter of Sheba, we don't know who that is, really. And so Mary is the only one that we know absolutely for certain, beyond a shadow of a doubt,
was Israelite.
Is Israelite.
Yeah.
Okay. We are talking about the same thing, but that's true. I was over here and you're over there. I understand now what you're trying to say. Dave, Daniel.
Regarding her comment, she's reading off the other different tribes. There was a Jewish commentary I read about that. They were saying the reason why those other women were brought in, this, their philosophy as to why God did it, not say the Bible says it,
right.
Was that it shows that the people of Israel's, their descendants, and all the inheritance were supposed to also pass on to these other tribes as well. The Moabites were brought into the house of Israel. The Canaanites brought into the house of Israel because they chose to join. They chose to be a part of it. So anybody who then chose, it was a symbol of the choosing to follow God at all costs. And so they did so. And as a result, they received all the blessings that God was going to dispose upon them, just as any other sojourner, which you read earlier in the Torah study today. If you were a sojourner and you chose to follow God, you have to obey the same rules, you get the same blessings, one law for both. There's no exception.
Right.
And the same philosophy, which is why those stories were so prominent and why they are mentioned here. They're mentioned in the Bible because they're such huge stories. I mean, to have some guy hook up with a girl from another tribe, another nation, and then bring her in, and then that person becomes a descendant of, or ancestor to David, and of course all the Messiah himself.
It
was a very big deal
right.
in Judaism because that rarely ever happened, and it's
what I wanted.
The Jews were proud upon it. That's why they made fun of this.
Yeah, Moab.
One thing I wanted to bring about. Okay, just we got running here because we're going to run out of time here, if you don't mind. We notice here that it's Abraham to David, the first king that God now says. Then from David to Babylon, the kings were removed. Now we have from Babylon to the Messiah, and the king is back. Do you understand? What's telling us there? That's why Matthew went out of his way to say 14 from Abraham to David, 14 from David to Babylon, and 14 from Babylon to the Messiah. Now, when you go back in history, I don't want to go too far in his, because it has to involve the book of Luke. When we get to the book of Luke, I'll join these two together because then you'll have some background. But because of what the curse that was put upon the house of David, that no one would sit upon the throne of David from a particular king from that point on. That was the only king that survived. And he had three sons. And then the generation goes on from there and there. Not a one of them sat upon the throne. Ever. Now along comes Messiah. And now we're known from Matthew. He says, this was going to sit on the throne. From a line that has been cursed in the house of or the line of David. And that's why I'm saying why it says here Emmanuel, because this has a statement he is stating to the house of David, meaning that the kinglyship. It's a little bit confusing right now. I just hope you understand what I'm saying, because in Babylon is when the line stopped and it cursed the line. You'll never sit on this throne again. Along comes the Messiah. So the Messiah came out of, this is the reason now, be very careful with me, this is the reason why one of the most Jewish people prove that Jesus cannot be the Messiah, because he comes from the cursed line. Therefore he is not. And they use the book of Matthew to prove it. Daniel.
Which is quite interesting, actually. to the question that was earlier, is why it's traced through the supposed husband's line,
right,
as opposed to it's not related to Mary. Mary's husband is actually traced to David too, but through a separate line.
Yeah, we have, that's the book.
Bypasses all the kings. So, on that issue, this is a big thing.
Okay.
Bypassed all the kings that were cursed. Was not related to any of them. I think they may connect somewhere in there, but most of them were not related to it. So it went all the way back up to David through a separate line, through no kingship, through Nathan. So that would result in him being part of a non-cursed line.
I want to clear a statement up by you, first of all, get your question. I'm looking at what is written. I'll accept that beyond anything else, because Joseph, being of that line, he was what? A just man, an upright man, a decent person who decided not to put judgment against Mary. That the husband has the choice. Okay? He has the choice. All right, to understand that particular aspect. Does that answer your question?
Well, I mean, it was just...
It had nothing to do with the Roman law.
Yeah,
because...
I was thinking more on a community-wide thing, why the community didn't bring something against her.
Yeah.
If it was his prerogative...
His prerogative.
He passed on it, and that's no big deal.
Or her, since they were not yet married, it could have been her father's prerogative. But her father's not listed as being alive. We don't know. So I wanted to know that little bit of, and now what, somebody else had one other?
I asked you why it was traced through the father's line.
Oh, okay. It's always been through the father line until modern times. Because they can trace, a woman knows who she slept with. Back then, there was not this incredible world that you can sleep with anything you want. And who's the dad? Who knows? No, they'd be able to trace it because they were more honorable back then and they really could trace it back. I grant you it comes to a stop here with an association with just the Messiah. It doesn't go on beyond that point of looking at the line that goes from Abraham forward to the time of Christ or to Jesus himself. It was always in the male line because the word says you will always have a male sitting on the throne. So therefore the line had to go back by the male and not the female.
But if Jesus is not the son of Joseph, then why?
Okay. That was the other question. Okay. What does that know to the Torah? What does the Torah tell us about that? There's a legal line. And then there is the bloodline. When a man dies and did not leave a son, what must his brother do? Okay? He must produce a male child, and the male child takes on the
inheritance
of not, but of the father that would have been. Okay? So we're looking here that we have a legal thing that goes on and that we don't have, quote, a father, but now Joseph becomes the legal one. He has by law to take care of, upbring, raise, and educate, do whatever he's supposed to do if it's his own son, but he cannot give unto that adopted son his heritage. He must give it unto his own. That's why it says she did not know Joseph, of Joseph did not know her until after. Alright. So now what does Jesus inherit?
His father's
throne. His father's heritage. That's what he gets to inherit. Now the key thing in this thing is one man in this line. And that man is Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel is a signet ring. And God calls him that. He is the signet ring. Now who's Zerubbabel? He is the one that came out of Babylon. He's still in that line. Now through Zerubbabel, what does it say that he's going to do with Zerubbabel?
He rebuilds the temple.
Zerubbabel was king. Who rebuilt the temple? It was not him. No, it was Ezra. And Nehemiah built the city. Zerubbabel was the governor. He was the ruler. He was of the line. And God said, say unto Zerubbabel, You are the signet. Through you, the Messiah will come. Now, when you trace Zerubbabel's family back, you go all the way back to what? King David, all the way back to Abraham. Now, we get into the book of Luke, there is no comparison. You get to go to Zerubbabel, and then the line is just the same as we have in Matthew. But the line getting up to Zerubbabel is nowhere near like it is in Matthew. See, this is the second proof. The book of Luke, since it's written by a Gentile, should be thrown out. I'm serious with you. If you were in a Jewish congregation, and even Messianic Jewish congregations, they will throw out the book of Luke. Lots of times, because its line is not the same as Matthew's. Therefore, Luke was an heir. And once you have an author who's an heir, guess what? There's an awful lot of errors in his writing. And therefore, it cannot be trusted. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? You could buy these two lines in the book of Matthew and the book of Luke. You can prove by the heritage that Jesus is not the Messiah. You can prove it. A cursed line? No way. And Luke, he's so far out in 14th field, he had no idea what he's talking about.
And what you're saying is that everybody has it out if they want one.
Correct. But what they don't have is what prophecy says. We won't go in there. We'll get to the book of Luke, and I'll go back to prophecy and why Luke did what he did, why he named what he named, because they're not exact line. Not a precise line in the book of Luke. Luke had a different frame of mind. He understood something about a prophecy. Not that Matthew didn't understand, but he had a different line reading prophecy. He knew this is what it meant. And that's why he's teaching his friend. What was his friend's name, by the way?
Theophilus.
Theophilus was very, very familiar with the history of Israel. He wasn't just a, huh? Very familiar with it.
So Daniel. Luke is Mary's life.
Leading to what? Well, we have to get to Luke. I don't want to get to Luke right now. I just want to get...
Ask me a question. Luke is Mary's life.
Yes, to a certain... Yes, but it's a different order. The order is different, and he names it differently. He names things that are completely this generation, like there's 15, 20, 30 generations. He names the other one.
He skips.
Why? Yeah, he skips.
He skips
major ones.
In 15 sentences, goes all the way back to Adam.
Yeah, he skips major generations. Matthew carefully nailed down 1, 2, 3, 4, and he named them. Look, no, he didn't. He's naming this person. Oh, and then he's naming that person. Well, there's people in between.
They weren't important.
Not important. Because he understood something about prophecy. And so did Theophilus understand something about prophecy. So why he wrote to Theophilus the way, because Theophilus knew the prophecy and he wanted to have a clarity of it, because that's what Luke wrote. He says, because there have been many things said, I'm going to set in order. Now remember, he's Greek. Greeks were very methodical about setting things in order. But you remember, it's a Greek mind that set it in order and not a Jewish mind. We'll get there when we get the book of Luke, because I can't run that fast. I want to pay attention to verse 25. Daniel made a statement that women always name it. 25, it says Joseph named him.
Right.
The reason why he named him is because of what the angel said to call him. Now, we have to go back to the name Emmanuel.
If that's the only place where my count is off, then Yeshua is the 14th generation of that third
group. Keep counting.
Can we take this up like
this is a big deal, though.
Well, I realize that, but this, you know, I'm saying, and I grant you, but I would like, Ellie, please. I think this is going to be discussed just in there somewhere, right down, because we're running out of time, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, and there's a technicality which you could, you know, specifically, you could easily fix, or not. I want to go to, I think it's Isaiah, the 8th chapter, 7th chapter. We're going to go to the 10th verse. Moreover, the Lord spoke again to Ahaz, saying, this is the God's asking this king now, he's a king, ask a sign for yourself from the Lord your God. Ask it either in the depths or in the height above. Ask me anything you want. And Ahaz was said, I'm not going to ask you anything. Now will I test the Lord. And then he said, hear now, O house of David. Now there's an explanation point, because the man refused to hear. He refused to ask and refused to hear. And he says, O house of David. Now this is what we're talking about. Is it a small thing for you to weary man? But will you also weary my God also? You trouble man, but you can trouble God too. God said, ask me the question. And you refuse to ask the question. You mean you're going to trouble God? You're going to put him to a test? Well, he said, therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, a virgin will conceive and bear a son, and he shall call his name Emmanuel. Now, we know his name is not Emmanuel.
Right.
Now, we're talking to the house of David. David. The house of David. The line of David. David. There's going to be a son born of a virgin, and he's going to be the Elohim with us, and you're out. He's angry. In the book of Isaiah.
At the house of David.
At the house of David. We have to be paying attention to who he's addressing. See, sometimes when we think about God be with us, we think, oh, that's a wonderful thing. And there's songs about Emmanuel. But we don't understand why it was said and who it was addressed to. It was addressed to the house of David who refused to hear.
It's a curse.
To the house of David. Not to mankind. God's taking over the throne, O house of David. You refuse to hear it? You refuse to, and you're troubling me? I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. And here now we have, I am now removing you. In time you will be removed. Then we have here Matthew. Now Matthew knew this word. Matthew understood the Hebraic statement. Matthew understood what it meant to the house of David. And that's why Matthew used that word.
Where Matthew used what word?
Emmanuel.
He was reminding them of the curse.
Reminding them of the curse. The king is taken over. A new king is, you're out.
Wow, why didn't they get mad at Matthew for saying something like that?
Well, they probably did. So you see what's happening here when you use the word Emmanuel. It's a nice word. I have no problem with God be with us. I mean, it's a blessing to Israel. It's a blessing to Judah. It's a blessing to the Jews. It's a blessing to all the tribes of Israel. And ultimately a blessing to all mankind, because now God is going to take over the throne. So when we look at think about Emmanuel, I like to think about it. It has to do that. And Matthew didn't make a mistake when he used the word. He knew exactly what he was addressing, because no one was on the throne during Matthew's time. There was no king on the throne. Quote, the closest king that could have been on that throne was Joseph himself.
Isn't that partly why the Jews didn't accept him, is because he didn't make himself king?
With several reasons.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. The basic reason why they didn't want to accept him as king is because the mere fact he didn't come as a Messiah.
As a big king.
As a king. He didn't come then. And so they said, you have not united the house of Israel. And that scripture says, when the king comes, he will unite the two houses. Now they were divided. And he's going to bring them together and make them one. And he says, he's not the Messiah, because the Messiah is supposed to bring them back together as one. And lo and behold, there's only one way that he's going to do it. And that is by taking his life.
But in Isaiah, it said how he would be born.
Yes.
Yeah. But see, they look at that and they say, that word virgin can be translated young woman.
Yes.
Which, if it was young woman, all people are born from a woman. What big deal is that?
Verse 16 here in this particular chapter, and he says, before the child, meaning before he reached the age of 12, understand that for a moment, shall know to refuse the evil and choose the good. The land that you dread, talking to this king now, will be forsaken by both her kings. Both the king of
Northern
king, the king will be forsaken, and the southern king, king of Judah, will be forsaken. Both cast out. Forsaken by God. So, you know, it's fascinating to look at this thing and knowing why Matthew used that word. He knew what it said in Isaiah. And the people he's writing to, they understood. We're 2,000 years later, plus or minus, and we're saying, oh, Emmanuel is a good name. I like it. Let's sing a song to it. We do. But we're not related to this prophecy because we're not connected along that line. So it's very interesting to go back and take a look at it and see what it says. I think it's very fascinating to know these things. Okay? Okay, I think that finishes chapter 1. I don't think any more comments have been made by it. You might make comments afterwards. And you can sit down and challenge the names, whatever you wish, and the number and all that kind of stuff. But I want to bring out the points of why it's there. Okay? And I want to bring out the points why there are from Abraham to David, the first king, David to Babylon, the kingdom's removed, and of Babylon to Christ, the kingdom's restored. That's what Matthew said, and that's why Matthew used the word Emmanuel. Okay? We'll get into Zerubbabel when we get to the book of Luke. I'm finished.